Hi, everybody. First of all, thank you, Quinchy, for the lovely introduction. And I would, how is the microphone? Are we working here good? Excellent. I would also like to thank the organizers of LinuxConf AU 2008 for having me, as well as the amazing job that they've done. I don't know how everybody else felt about the Penguin dinner last night being in the bazaar, but I thought that was totally awesome. So go you guys if you just happen to be watching this video. So I'm here to talk to you all today about Google Open Source, Google Summer of Code, and the Google Highly Open Participation Contest. So, brief agenda, and I promise there's only one other slide with bullets. I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about who we are, what we do, why we do it. So, meet the open source team. Yeah, we're not those guys. Actually, we are those guys. This is Brian Fitzpatrick. I'll tell you a little bit more about him later. But this is actually Fitz showing up to the Chicago office, where we have half of the open source engineering team. And it just so happens these guys wouldn't move, so we started a Chicago engineering force. And here's Fitz on Halloween pretending to be a sales guy, which was really, really scary because all the sales guys dressed up as engineers. Needless to say, they were much better dressed than anyone expected an actual engineer to be. Shalom, this is Chris DeBona. He's a former Slashdot editor. He, if you guys ever watched Tech TV, was the Linux dude on Tech TV. He was the guy who founded the Open Source Programs Office about 3 years ago. His first mission upon joining Google was to make sure that we maintain internal license discipline and were fully compliant with all the open source licenses for the code we were using. He's the head honcho, the big cheese. We love the Chris. This gentleman looking very surprised at an elevator is Greg Stein. He's the chairman of the Apache Software Foundation. He's the manager who is responsible for launching our project hosting service on Google Code. And right now, he's busy working on a bunch of cool stuff for our developer operations efforts. This gentleman with the absolutely fantastic grin is Mr. Jeremy Allison. He's a SAM maintainer. He's a cool guy. He's also one of the folks who's instrumental in some of our standards work, which I'll talk about in just a moment. This is Ian Hickson, or as I like to call him, Hixie the Pedantic. Now, I spend all my time around open source people, so if you actually earn the epithet the pedantic, you know it's got to be bad. Hixie's our standards guru, and I'll tell you a little bit about what Hixie works on in just a bit. And here we go. This is Mr. Fitzpatrick looking like his typical self over here on this end. And Ben Collins-Sussman here, bookending Poole, Henning Camp, and Warner Losch. This photo was taken at BSD Canada, where Ben and Fitz had been invited to give their poisonous people talk. In addition to all of their efforts as Apache developers and Subversion developers, Ben and Fitz have done a lot of work to help folks in the open source community do effective community management. Their poisonous people talk is up on Google Video. I think it's been watched 30,000 times now. It's a really excellent resource if you're interested in community management issues of any kind, because Ben and Fitz go through and talk about some of the issues that face community managers that are really difficult, like how do you deal with the noisy minority? How do you deal with that person who's actually really passionate, really, really enthusiastic, really, really helpful, really, really lacking clue? And what do you do to fix that problem? So I highly recommend that. Also, I don't know if any of you folks are working for a company that does proprietary development, but your real passion is open source. Ben and Fitz have also prepared an excellent presentation on what is in it for your company to open source their code base, different strategies for doing that, and different pros and cons for each. So another great resource for you guys. And last but not least, Mr. John Trowbridge. John's a GNOME guy from way back. He's currently working on our Palimpsest efforts, which is our project to host large-scale scientific data sets. Chatting about that more in a minute. And there are also several folks who are not actually pictured here, mostly because I couldn't find a good photo of them. But just to give credit where credit is due, Miss Cat Allman shown at the back, actual size. Community management goddess, also Jeff Bailey, who some of you folks might have known from his days at Canonical, who is now working on making Summer of Code a wonderful and happy place to be for all of our mentors. Todd Larson, who works on license compliance. Daniel Berlin, not pictured here, which is probably a good thing. Daniel Berlin is something of an intimidating figure. You meet Danny B, and he's a really nice guy, very high energy, very, very cool, very down to earth. And then you find out that he's a Subversion developer, Apache developer, GCC hacker, LLVM maintainer. Oh, yeah, and he's an IP attorney. Danny B is in charge of our license compliance. So we know whenever you get somebody on list going, I am not a lawyer, I am not a lawyer, he's always the person to respond with, well, I am a lawyer, and. It's pretty cool. So what do we do? First of all, our team is responsible for standards research and adoption. So what I mean by that is a couple of different things. So we were fairly active in the process for fighting the OOXML adoption in Europe. We actually worked with some folks from the Free Software Foundation to make that happen, specifically George Grieve. Jeremy Allison was really the engineer responsible for spearheading all of our efforts there, and that, as we all know, turned out relatively well for now. As far as standards research, you remember Hixie the pedantic from a moment ago. Hixie has actually written the most extensive research ever done on the actual use of HTML on the web. So he had a fairly substantial corpus of documents available to run scripts against and, you know, check and see how HTML was actually used. So if you're interested in that, if you're an HTML geek at heart, you can find Hixie's research linked off of code.google.com. Check it out, it's pretty cool. Hixie also, in his, you know, copious amounts of spare time when he's not busy being pedantic, actually is the founder of the WetWG and sits on the W3C XHTML, excuse me, HTML5 working group. License compliance. License compliance is fun. And by fun, I mean painful. Painful, painful, painful. We actually have a team of about now 20 individuals, and we are responsible for making sure that all of the open source code that Google uses is actually used in, you know, conjunction with, oh, you know, proper license discipline. So this is no easy task because we have millions and millions and millions and millions of lines of open code, and we want to make sure that we're actually using it properly and, you know, treating our friends in the open source community correctly. So we have an actual whole team dedicated to doing this. At some point, we will be publishing a white paper that talks a little bit more about how we do this work. And everybody hear about the FossBazaar Fossology announcement by HP? Yes, thank you very much. Our team is also helping to fund some of the work that those guys are doing, so there's going to be tools not just behind our walled garden, but out there for everyone else to use. Open source project hosting. We launched our open source project hosting service in July of 2006, and we launched it at OSCON. Has anybody ever gotten a chance to go over to OSCON in Portland? Cool conference. I highly recommend it to anybody if you want to head stateside. We'll see what we can do about the whole TSA, U.S. government thing before you go over. The cool thing about our open source project hosting service is we eat our own dog food. So when we go ahead and open source Google created code, we use our own project hosting service to do that. We have downloads, wiki, issue tracking, you can browse your source, it's got a Subversion backend, it's got integration with Google Groups, it's, you know, we're very, very proud of this effort. Within 3 months of launching, we were like the second largest hosting site on the internet right after SourceForge, approximately 700,000 projects hosted there to date. It's cool beans. Oh, and we're ad-free, yay, yes. Also, our group is responsible for open sourcing Google created code. We do that in a couple of different ways. This is one, Google code that's been created that we think is useful to everybody. And in fact, for about the last year and a half, I've had the privilege of teaching our employee orientation class on Google's use of open source and how to do it properly. And one of the things that we do is every new engineer that comes and begins working at Google, we encourage them, one, if you use open source and you improve it, and you haven't improved it in some secret sauce way, we actively encourage you to contribute that patch back. Not only do we actively encourage our engineers to contribute those patches back, we have worked out a process with our legal team so that there is almost no barrier to doing it, other than, hi, I'd like to submit this patch. Yes, we've taken a look at it. Go ahead and do it. So we love our lawyers. I know many people in the open source community feel like our lawyers are not our friends. We love our lawyers. Our lawyers are our friends. And we also take code that we've created ourselves that we think is useful to the community, useful to a wider audience than just us, and open source that. To date, we've released something like 1 million lines of code. We have 113 active projects, some of which are actually in the process of being handed over completely to the community for maintenance because the Google engineers involved have decided that it's time to move on to another project. So that's also pretty exciting. Hosting large-scale scientific data sets. This is a really cool project and one that I think is, it's a lot of fun. It's not strictly open source code, but it's one of those great things that we do. We found that with military spending increasing by a small amount in states, that there were a bunch of scientific institutions that were discovering, wait a minute, we don't have any more funding. What do we do? We literally had groups coming to us saying, we have these, you know, N terabytes of data, and we're losing all of our machines. In fact, these machines are just going to be wiped, and we have this data and we don't know what to do with it. Can you take it? Can you help? So we went, sure. So we started the palimpsest project. This is actually a picture of Archimedes' palimpsest. One of the first data sets we got was actually the image data for the palimpsest manuscript. And we're also eventually going to be getting the Hubble Space Telescope data. So when the Hubble folks get that over to us, you'll be able to play around, maybe even do some overlays with Google Sky. Fun stuff like that. Space, it's sexy. Academic research. Is Grant here? Are you hiding here? Okay. Well, so the open source team sponsors a whole bunch of different academic research that's useful and helpful to the open source community. It also happens to be useful and helpful to Google. If you're particularly interested in this topic, I would come to Open Day to our booth and talk to Grant Grundler. He's one of our kernel engineers. Right now we're working with the University of New South Wales to do some research on kernel I/O timings, which is pretty cool. And my own personal favorite, Ms. Jean Camp and her anti-phishing research. I just like fish, you know, what are you gonna do? And have any of you folks heard of NetTrust? NetTrust was some research done by Jean Camp at Indiana University, and it basically was a way to rank websites for trustability based on social networking stuff. So we were very proud of that. And there's tons of other academic research that we fund and work on, and all of that you can find, again, on code.google.com. I'll be mentioning that URL a few times. Let me just mention it again, code.google.com. Community events. This is sort of where Kat and I come in. This is, you know, one of the funnest things that we do. We host a lot of different community events, both on our campus or sponsoring great conferences like LCA. This is actually the C++ Standards Committee meeting that took place last year. This guy over here, ooh, don't run into the front of this if you're going to talk with him. Mr. Matt Ostern, GCC guy. The really cool thing is we talk to a lot of community groups and they're, you know, they come to us and they're like, hey, Google, could you help us out? We want to host a user conference, but it's going to be really, really expensive. And the great thing about working for Google is we have nice conference rooms, we've got nice food, and we've got nice amounts of wireless. So we, you know, like to invite people to come on down to our campus, use our facilities, hang out with us. And it's really cool because we also get the opportunity to have folks from the community talking to the folks who work there and sharing ideas and getting together and really having, you know, a mutual learning experience. So that's one of the things that I work on, which is a lot of fun. We were privileged to be able to host the first meeting for the Linux Foundation right after it was founded. And any KDE kids in the house? We had the KDE 4 release party at our campus in the middle of January. Aaron Sago gave a keynote. He did not fall off the stage. That is good. Always a plus. And then there's also sponsorships of events that, you know, take place out in the community. Clearly, the conference we're at now. And things like Software Freedom Day. I'm really excited about our sponsorship of Software Freedom Day this past year. It was the first time that Google did sponsor the event. And what was really particularly cool was right before Software Freedom Day, a group of our engineers had gone over to Beijing to hang out and see what was going on in the open source community. And the Beijing Linux Users Group approached us and said, we're hoping to get some funding for some of the activities that we'd like to do in the coming months. Can you guys help us out? So we said, sure, that sounds great. Well, it turned out that what they actually were hoping for funding for was to help them out with Software Freedom Day. So we were really, really excited to hear about that. They sent us a whole bunch of photos. It was really, really cool. And they were actually one of the three winning teams this year. So really excited about that, really proud of that. Fred Mueller and his team, you guys rock. Funding development. So how many of you get paid to write the code that you love to write? Well, depending on how you feel about Stormy's talk this morning, maybe there shouldn't be more hands in the room. We have paid for a whole bunch of improvements to a whole bunch of different stuff. I would say, you know, first of all, there are the engineers that we employ to work on their open source projects. Guido Van Rossum, the creator of Python, works for Google. Andrew Morton, kernel maintainer, works for Google. We pay him to do nothing but work on the kernel. Sean Egan, the game guy, the list goes on. And also for, you know, improvements that we think would be useful to us, we're happy to fund those, that work to be done through the community and then released under an open license. So how many of you use Wine? Anybody? Fabulousness. We haven't actually talked about it yet, but it's certainly out there in the source tree already. We recently paid CodeWeavers to do some work on Wine so that you can now run Photoshop on Linux. Supposedly it's working really, really well. Pardon? CS2 and 3. Pascal. Be nice. And apparently, I've not actually seen this, so I cannot confirm nor deny the rumor, but apparently Dan Kegel actually purchased Kraftwerk by Audubon from Linux with the work he's recently done on iTunes, which is pretty sexy, so that's nice. And again, we always encourage our engineers to contribute patches back, so in that way we're also funding development, although I have to say that's not nearly as exciting as what we've done for Wine or some of the stuff we've done for Subversion or the kernel. All right, let's talk about what I really know about, Summer of Code. Does everyone know what Summer of Code is? If you do not, speak now. Fabulousness. So, Summer of Code is our program where we fund students to work on open source projects during a 3-month period, which roughly equates with the summer holidays in the United States and Northern Hemisphere, because of course we would not want to be hemispherists, although we are. This program was started in 2005, and I'm actually going to tell you the full story of the history right now. Remember this guy from the beginning, Chris Bona? I wasn't there for this story, but I wish I was, because I would pay to have seen the look on Chris's face. Apparently, he was walking through the hall in Building 43 at Google HQ, and Larry Page stopped him and said, "You know, Chris, I'm bummed out." Chris said, "Okay, Larry, what's going on?" And he said, "Well, Chris, I've been looking at some of the kids we've been hiring these days and looking through resumes and seeing the interns who come in, and there's just this real problem. We get all these new college graduates, and they're theoretically brilliant, and they're really, really smart, but, you know, you look at what they've done over the summer, and they have no idea what it's like to work in a real-world software development environment. They've been flipping burgers, or they've been, you know, working at doing tech support at the local camera store, and this is a real problem, and we have to fix this, and I think you should do it." And Chris went, "Oh, yeah, Larry, no prob, sure, got it, all over it." And Larry walked on his merry way, and Chris went back to his office and went, and Summer of Code was born, which is a fabulous and beautiful thing. And this is the last slide with bullets, yay us. So Summer of Code's been going for 3 years now. We've got around 1,500 kids who have successfully gotten through the program, which basically means that they've completed work on their application to the satisfaction of their mentor. Just in 2007 alone, we produced over 1 million lines of code in about 3 months. It's really, really exciting. This is 90 countries across the world. Thus far, we've provided $10 million in funding to date to open source. I constantly remark on mailing lists and in person, and I can't say it any more sincerely. It is absolutely and totally a privilege to be able to work on this program. I have the dream job that I've always wanted, and I can't imagine anything better that I could be doing with my days. We've got over 130 projects working with us now. In fact, it was pretty cool. LCA last year, actually. Is Tim here? Yeah, Tim's here. All right. So in 2006, it was the first year that we took applications for open source projects, because before, in 2005, it was a big experiment and it was just like, let's just do it. Let's make it happen. Let's see what comes out of it. And it was really, really cool. And then in 2006, we thought, let's work some of the bugs out. Let's actually get organizations to apply. Oh, yeah. And we got an email from the 1000 Parsec project, and we're like, okay, it's a small gaming project, not sure that this is the right move for us, okay. Well, not this year, maybe next year. And I went to LCA last year, and suddenly this gentleman walks up to me in the hallway and says, "Hi, Leslie, I'm Tim, and I'm with 1000 Parsec." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, I remember your mail." And he's like, what do we need to do to get into Summer of Code? And I'm really, really excited about it. And I'm thinking, all right, here's someone who's willing to accept the fact that we're hemispherists. Always a plus. And, you know, Tim seemed like a fairly sane guy, although, I don't know, I may have been proven wrong on that at some point, but he's definitely a very sweet person. And I thought, okay, what the hey. And not only did the 1000 Parsec project perform absolutely fantastically, they actually came to us and mentioned that there was some extra development work that one of their students had offered to do in an application, but it wasn't mission critical, but it was something that they were really hoping could get done. And so the student's name was Donata, and apparently she's been popping in and out, not quite as active as we'd like her to be. Donata, if you're watching this, cop up the code, woman. Thank you very much. But just the fact that Tim and his team were so excited to actually try and get, you know, more work done on their project. And I remember getting a mail from him around about the end of the program last year saying, you know, I'm really excited because I graduate next year, and because of Summer of Code, I feel like there's actually going to be someone to take up the reins when I'm gone. And I went, this is why I work the long weeks. Gayo. So, no more numbers. Couple more success stories. This is Adriano Montero Marquez. He started off as a student in 2005 working with the NMAP security scanner project. This later evolved into UMIT. Anybody used UMIT? UMIT's the graphical user front end for NMAP. It actually stands for Use Me Instead Trinity, because Adriano had actually watched The Matrix and seen, you know, NMAP sitting there, and apparently that was his moment of inspiration. And he thought, wait a minute, wouldn't it be great if network administrators had a more visual way to look at their data and make effective use of it? And hence, UMIT was born. Really, really, really cool stuff about Adriano. He actually went on to become his own mentoring organization in 2007, where he took on 8 students by himself. Apparently, we had 4% Brazilian students in Summer of Code last year, almost all exclusively due to Adriano. He's also following in the footsteps of Fyodor, his mentor, who for the first Summer of Code, again, took on 10 students by himself. Other cool things about Adriano, you can actually see his work in the Bourne Supremacy. So when Jason Bourne is looking at NMAP, he's actually using UMIT, so that's pretty cool. And this shoulder right here is Vanessa, Adriano's girlfriend and now wife. They actually just got married 2 days ago. Adriano just out of the blue sent a mail to our support alias and said, hi, Summer of Code has been very influential in my life. It's been a privilege for me to participate. Can you send someone down to speak at my graduation? And I looked at that and I thought, well, my boss is never going to let me go do this. So I'm like, I'm going to ask Chris. Chris, can I go to Brazil and speak at this guy's graduation? Knowing full well, of course, he's going to say no. And he's like, yeah, why don't you go do that? And I'm like, I wasn't really ready for that. Okay, I'm going to Brazil. So it was really cool. I got to go down and address Adriano's graduating class. It was really amazing. I'm sort of waiting in the wings with his professor, and they're grabbing me and telling me all about how much, you know, they love open source, how much they love free software, and how they're so excited that Google is there to give this talk. And it was just an amazing experience. So Adriano and Vanessa Marquez, congratulations. And Adriano let me know that he used his Summer of Code money to help pay for his wedding and also to get a motorcycle. In that order. I rode on the motorcycle. It was cool. This gentleman is Andrew Morton. He worked with the Drupal project. Does anybody know Angela Byron by any chance from the Drupal project? Any Drupal folks? One? Okay. So let's, to give you a little bit of background on Andrew, we need to start with Angela. Angela was a Summer of Code student in 2005. When Angie started with the project, she had absolutely no open source experience whatsoever. She was really, really excited about the idea of open source, but she was incredibly intimidated. She didn't think that she really had anything to contribute, and she was worried because she thought these were the superstar elite hackers of the world, and what can I possibly do? And then she looked at Summer of Code, and she thought, you know, wait a minute, they want students, okay? They don't want superstar experts, okay? I can do this. And her application was accepted. And 2 years later, Angie is the communications officer for the Drupal Foundation, the Drupal Association. She is doing well as a consultant, let's say, and she's also a tireless advocate for both open source and women in open source. If you ever get a chance to go and hear one of Angie's talks, she's been a personal inspiration to me, and I highly, highly recommend her work. And Andrew, her protege. So Angie was looking through, in her copious spare time, wanting to be a Summer of Code mentor, Angie was looking through the applications that the Drupal project received last year and noticed that there was this guy named Andrew Morton who had submitted an application, and what he wanted to do was to make Drupal easier to use. So if you're actually, you know, an accidental techie, and you're trying to build a Drupal site, the problem is that you are spoiled for choice. There are so many different community-contributed modules that you can add to your website that you don't actually know which one is good, which one is not, which one is applicable to what you're trying to do, which one is just kind of there. So Andrew actually went through and using all sorts of wonderful, complicated algorithmic goodness and some anecdotal evidence, actually wrote in some code that actually allows you to just sort of pick and choose a particular Drupal module based on your application, and that way you can figure out what's going to work best for you automatically, which has apparently simplified the lives of many, many folks who are working in the nonprofit and NGO industries and trying to, you know, basically build a web presence And that is fabulous. Last but not least, Aini. Aini is another personal inspiration to me. Notice the theme of the inspiring women in open source undercurrent in this talk. Thank you. We are out there, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me. Aini is a student in Indonesia. She is working with the Joomla project. She is focusing right now on a smart card server application for this content management system. When I first heard about Aini, I didn't quite believe it. So she, in addition to all of her work in open source, she also teaches a course at her university on open source development, teaches classes on getting women into open source, and was recently nominated to be part of this Imagine contest in Singapore. Apparently it's very prestigious. I went to the website and couldn't read it, but I believed her because she's a very sweet and honest person. I talked to Aini a couple months ago. She mailed me and let me know she was going to go speak at a conference and asked me if I had any tips for her, and I said, you know, just go, you'll do fine, no worries. And I got mail back from her afterwards saying that, you know, she had given her talk and she was really excited about it and it had been a really good experience for her. And she came up, she said that everybody came up to her after the talk was over and said, are you really doing all that stuff? But you're a girl. And I thought, wow. So from here on out, I'm going to put her picture in my slides just so that, you know, in case anyone's confused, yes, she's a girl, interestingly enough. And if I may make a momentary tangent down the woman and open source track, since I know that's a topic that's near and dear to many of our hearts, all the ladies in the audience, yes, that's you. Having experienced one too many sessions on women and open source, which really ends up being a bash fest to our male allies who are kindly, sweetly sitting there because they want to help make our lot better. How many of you gentlemen have ever been to one of these things? You can be honest, it's okay. And felt, oh my God, they all hate me. I see no hands are raising. That clearly you've been to a couple and just don't want to admit it. Ladies, if you ever find yourself in a situation where someone is asking you what they can do to help, my only words of encouragement are please give people practical advice. Like, a good piece of practical advice that I like to give gentlemen who want to know how they can help get more women into open source is, please stop uncomfortable silences. What I mean by this. Somebody says, blah, 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 offensive comment here. And then a woman will pipe up and point out, perhaps offensive comment was not appropriate because of this and such. I've even watched it in IRC. You will watch the time log. 2 minutes, no conversation. During that 2 minutes, and I'm just going to speak for myself. I can't speak for every other woman. Your self-esteem has gone to dev null. You're thinking, oh my God, I shouldn't have said anything. You're thinking, oh my God, they hate me. Nyeh, nyeh. That didn't just happen. You know, it's times like this when, you know, a little bit of agreement from the gentleman in the room would be helpful. And if you're not worried about getting more women into open source, that's okay too. Not every noble goal is for everybody. And believe it or not, for Summer of Code, we have had several Aussies and Kiwis shown here actual size. Please stand up. Well, the real Summer of Coders, please stand up. Please stand up. Don't make me sing anymore, Eminem. Tim and Lee, I know you're in the audience. Stand up. Thank you very much. May I present Adam Harvey from the Drupal Project, Sam Moffitt from the Joomla Project, who is one of my own personal, private, personal heroes because he has gone on to mentor other students later on. Thank you, Sam. Despite the fact that he could still do it and get paid. Thank you. We love the Sam. I'll just buy you beer. Is that okay?
That works.
Rock on. And Tim and Lee from the 1000 Parsec Project. Shown here actual size. All right. So the question that I always get asked during this talk is, so hemispherist, when is there going to be a Southern Hemisphere Summer of Code? Well, here's the deal, folks. Should we choose to announce that we're going to do a Summer of Code 2008, we'd probably announce it sometime in the next 3 weeks. And should we do a Southern Hemisphere Summer of Code program, we'd probably announce it sometime in October. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say more, say no more. You can all be really excited now. human bodies wanted to join the team to help make that happen if it's possibly going to happen. Yes, ma'am. So here's the thing. Rather than go wah, 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 trademark infringement, yada, 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 because we actually really want to see the Summer of Code meme spread, because frankly, we can't possibly always do it all on our own, we were really happy to give you money and let you feel the love. And I would really, really love your help should we choose to do this in October of this year, Ms. Wallace. Thank you. All right, so I promised at the beginning of this talk that we talk a little bit about the Google Highly Open Participation Contest. And for folks like Adam and Sam and Tim and unfortunately not Lee, who were with me at OSDC last November, this has been a labor of love of mine for about 9 months now. A little bit of history of G-Hop. There was this girl, and she was working for this guy named Chris, and he said, so, how would you like to come work for me? And I'm like, Chris, there's nobody to backfill me. I don't think the team I'm working for is going to let me go. I'd really love to. Summer of Code is really exciting to me, but I just don't think it's going to happen. And he said, oh, I don't know. Engineering usually gets what it wants. And I went, okay, Chris, sure, no problem. Great. And promptly, you know, forwarded that to not going to happen. And about 2 weeks later, he said, okay, you're working for me now. And I went, thank you, Chris. Yeah. And this was followed by, okay, so Summer of Code last year, there were a few problems. Why don't you go fix those? Sure, Chris, no problem. By the way, we need to do something for high school kids. Oh. Okay, Chris. I figured that for the next problem, that will be a continuing theme. So anyone who wants to join us for the handshake, please let me know. I'm really actually very excited about this picture. This was on return from my first speaking engagement ever for Google with my little Guada Linux penguin scarf that the Ubuntu kids gave me after we hosted the Ubuntu Developer Summit, and the little Joomla hat that the Joomla kids gave me when I went and talked at their user conference. Anyway, this is what I like to call geek chic. It can be done. So basically, I thought, all right, we need to do something for secondary schoolers. So what are the goals of getting more secondary schoolers involved in open source? Well, actually, there were a lot of challenges up front. I mean, things like, how many secondary schoolers are there who want to work on open source stuff? I mean, where do they meet? How do I find these people? Are they really going to want to do this? And how many of them are really going to be great coders if they're in, like, high school or, you know, what is it, fifth stream, fourth stream? Somebody help me out who's a local? Okay, maybe not. All right. So we thought, what are the things that we know that secondary schoolers can help us with or help these projects with? Okay, well, there's documentation, training, user interface research, code, of course, still. And we also wanted to make the offering to these students as broad as possible. Because if there was one thing that we had heard a lot of, it was open source is not just about code. It's about a lot of other types of contributions. And there are many people who get into open source and make great contributions to it who don't come in submitting patches. They start taking a look at the documentation and going, you know what, wait a minute. Well, I can rewrite this and I can make it better, but I don't think that this works quite right. There's a bug here. So then they go and submit their first patch that way. Or they take a look at the UI and they go, man, this button is completely undiscoverable. This sucks. I'm going to go file a bug. And because they had that opinion, then somebody said, well, you know, patch is welcome. And they went, okay, fine, I'll do it. We have 10 organizations participating in this pilot effort. It's a mix of content management system projects and a couple of other groups that we knew would do a good job with our WE students. As you can imagine, there was a small amount of fear and trepidation on my part, unleashing open source on 13-plus-year-olds, mostly because, you know, international contest law is a scary, scary process. This is why I love my legal team. And we actually don't have a lot of statistics about who is participating at this point, because international law, when you're dealing with those under the age of 18, does not allow you to collect their personal and private information, like their address data, their names, their ages, unless they're actually claiming a prize. So I should actually have more information for anybody who's interested around about the 22nd, when everybody claims their prizes, which includes some money, but most importantly, the T-shirt. I have proof that the T-shirt is the most important aspect of this contest on a later slide. Anyway, just to go over the folks that joined us, we have the Apache folks, the Python folks, the Drupal folks, the GNOME folks, Moodle folks, the Plone folks, Mono, Silverstripe, Joomla, and Moin Moin. I figured that was a good mix. Again, this was an experiment. Let's see who turns up to the party. One organization that I was really, really excited to be working with was the Moodle Project, simply because it was giving students an opportunity to improve their own situations, because this is course management software, and it was really, really cool. We will talk a bit more about other coolness with that in a second. What GHOP is. I went to these different open source projects and I said, hey guys, we have this new initiative, we want to do it. It's going to be a lot of hard work. We don't exactly know quite what we're doing, but we have some ideas. And they said, okay. And I said, give us some bite-sized chunk things that brand new contributors can do. This could be anything from go through our documentation and find all the broken links and tell me where the broken links should actually point to. Or, yes ma'am, 5 more minutes? Oh, wow. I will talk even faster than I usually do. Okay, fabulous. We're nearly to question time. Anyway, bite-sized chunk tasks. One of the coolest stories I've heard so far is from the Apache Software Foundation. They apparently had a student who organized a meeting in his father's grocery store so that folks could come in and learn more about Apache. And this was in Nepal, and about 30 people turned up. And he was just presenting based on, you know, some drawings that he'd made, because he didn't even have the, like, a laptop to show slides. So that was pretty cool. Now, just in case we wanted any evidence whatsoever that all open source contributions can effectively be managed through T-shirt, any student completing a single task for this contest gets a shirt. Notice how many students have done one task. This part of the pie. And in order to get cash, you need to complete 3 tasks. Yay, part of the pie. So I'm thinking it's all about the T-shirt, people. And in fact, you would be shocked by the number of Summer of Code, both organization applications and student applications, that specifically mention the shirt. Why do you want to do Summer of Code? Well, I'm really excited about programming in Python, and I'd really like to optimize this, and blah, 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 and by the way, I want the shirt. If you actually grep our application database for, by the way, I want the shirt, I think it appears 37 times in... The maximum number of times was 37 times, and that was for the Python Software Foundation. Anyway, so we had about 1,000 tasks total for the program. 920 were completed at last count, and we'll have full and final statistics on Monday, which is when it's pencils down, all work needs to be turned in. And I'm actually going to end with this slide. I wanted to talk a little bit about why Google does all this stuff. I run a lot of community events along with the help of Kat, and the question we get most frequently is, what's in this for Google? And people don't want to believe an altruistic answer. And I understand and completely sympathize with that, because I know that, let's just say, sometimes corporations are not so nice to the open source community. We get it. And the fact of the matter is, what's in it for us is what's in it for all of you. Google's mission as a company is to make all of the world's organization universally accessible and useful. Source code is information. The more open code that's out there for everybody to freely make use of, the better the internet is, the better computing is. What's good for computing, what's good for the web, is good for Google. I can imagine that there are probably several people in the back there thinking, where are the evil monkeys she's about to unleash? They're not actually in this closet. They're not actually anywhere, but if anyone wants to participate in the Google is evil, throw tomatoes rant, please come and see me. And last but not least, I wanted to talk about some of the most amazing things to come out of GHOP from my perspective. It's been the contributions of Summer of Code students to actually help mentor all of the secondary school students who have been in GHOP, and also to help just make the GHOP program better. Alexandre Vercherver, I can't actually pronounce his last name, but Alexandre, you know who you are, actually worked with the Python Software Foundation in 2007 as a Summer of Code student, has been actively mentoring other students who participate in highly open participation. It's pretty cool. The Python Software Foundation, at the very beginning of the contest, we told everybody, we will fund 100 tasks for you. 100 things you need to get done, we'll find the money for, we'll find the T-shirts for. Within a week, they told me they needed 250 slots. I was like, yes, wait a minute, we figured out where they meet. Woohoo! And this gentleman deserves a really special shout-out and word of thanks. This is Powell Sweya. He's worked with the WinLibre project in Summer of Code for the last 2 years. Powell is, in addition to being an old hand at BSD, he's also a user interface expert. He's co-founder of the Natural User Interface Group. And Powell and his friends were going to meet BSD. Powell wanted to give a talk about Summer of Code. He's like, can we have some help with travel sponsorship? I'm like, yes, I can find a small amount of funding for you to go, please do. He not only went out and did research on how all of the BSD projects had done in Summer of Code and presented about all of them at the conference, which I thought was really, really sweet. He sent me this cool photo and then turned up a couple weeks later and said, so thank you so much for all your help. You're awesome. What can I do to help you? And I'm like, oh, just be yourself. You're awesome. Save the world or something. Saving the world is good. And if it weren't for Powell, we would not have all of these fabulous charts, all of the statistics tracking, all of the capabilities to run the program well from an administrative perspective. He wrote several scripts that just made the life of all of our program mentors easier. And it's just, like I said before, it's a privilege to work with this community. It's a privilege to help facilitate making things happen. And it's just a privilege to get the love back from all of you and all of our students. So again, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, end of February, early March, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, October-ish. The end. Any questions, please? Yes, sir. When am I starting? The question is, when are we starting on primary school kids? The answer is, should we choose to do something with primary school kids? I'd have to think about that an awful lot more. But if you have any suggestions, I would be welcome to hear them. Yes, Mr. Klein.
I don't want to give you guys too much of a
kick.
Yeah, just a question regarding some of the sort of academic data you guys get in from universities. What happens to that regarding licensing? Because the Google Maps stuff's not public domain, which I'm fine with because you guys, you know, put satellites in space and did all the work for us. But stuff like, you know, scanning of books and things that are public domain or things coming in from university, will they be public domain or accessible over an open license?
So I think what you're asking me is some of the data that we are actually scanning and making available on the web is whether or not we'll make it available under an open license.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question in all honesty. What I do know is that some of the folks on our developer team have been working very, very hard to make sure a lot of our content is licensed Creative Commons. For example, right now, if you look at a bunch of Google Tech Talks, you'll notice that they all say copyright Google. Technically, what that means is because Google did the recording and therefore fixed the talk in a particular medium, we own that recording. We're working on getting all of that released as Creative Commons license. So as far as the next stuff down the line, I can't say, but I certainly see the company moving in that direction. Yes, sir.
Jerry, for the Summer of Codes?
Yes. I don't understand what that means.
Okay. I've been a mentor with the AbbeyWord project, and we've had Summer of Code for the last 2 years. It's been fantastic. We really enjoyed it. It's been great for the project. So I also live down here, so I'd like to have summer in the Northern Hemisphere and summer in the Southern Hemisphere.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, October. What's your name?
Martin Sabian.
Martin, oh my gosh, it's so nice to finally meet you. How are you? Are you coming to our fabulous party tonight?
Of course.
Yay. Oh, and by the way, if you are a professional delegate and you do not go to the professional delegates networking session, I may be forced to give you a beating. If you are a student or hobbyist, you are welcome to join us this evening for our student party, which is sort of really Joel Stanley's idea, but you'll hear all about that later. And come and have fun with us at the Belvoir Discovery, details on the wiki. And I saw another hand over here.
Leslie, I was going to ask you, I'm from the University of Ballarat, which is just around the corner from here. And I teach computing in School of IT, and well, amongst other units, I also teach Linux and open source. And last year, I changed, rather than thinking about giving students assignments from dreaming about them, I gave them for assignment to go to SourceForge and choose projects on their own and make contribution. And they did
That's
that
fantastic.
Last year. The problems I had is sometimes students having so many projects there didn't know which to choose and what to do, things like that. I'm planning to do the same this year, and I'm just thinking, is any like a wish list or something that we can get, and then I can tell students to focus on certain projects, and they have, you know, they can code in like from C++, Java, PHP, and we have different number of, you know, of students.
When are you going to start those assignments?
Probably in the second semester, July.
So, should we choose to run Summer of Code again in the Northern Hemisphere, every organization actually produces something that's called an ideas list. And that ideas list is to help students get started when they're creating their application. So, I know I want to work on Python, but I don't know what to do. I can go to the Python Software Foundation's ideas list, click on that, and get some inspiration. Yeah. Try my application. Should we do it again, I would think that would be a great place for your students to start looking for bite-sized chunks that really help them get their hands on what they want to do.
That would be great, because we are the first one who started in Ballarat, and I heard some, you know, some other lecturers also been interested in having students to code some other, you know, in open source rather than just thinking of
and
coding and then never using the applications.
Wonderful. I'll tell you what, come up and get my card as soon as we're done answering questions, and I'd love to talk with you further about any other way we can help you out.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. And yes, ma'am.
Hi. I was wondering if you know anything about what you think would be
The question is if I know anything about the Affero GPL. The answer is no. If you would like to hear more about that, I'd be happy to put you in touch with Daniel Berlin, who actually can answer IAAL instead of IANAL. And that's, I'm sorry, no, I can't really help you out there. Anybody else? All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming.